Welcome to Primrose Lane Podcast 7, the real paranormal events that inspired the making of the psychological film Primrose Lane, which continues as the episodic series The Passage. I'm the filmmaker, Kathleen Davison, and I'm joined in studio with paranormal specialist Pamela Beatty. Pamela, how are you today?
Oh, I think pretty good. Sun is shining. It's not cold. I'm happy.
Great. So we're going to talk about scary stuff.
Yes.
Now,
if you're the best time.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, please stop. Please stop and scroll down in the comment sections. If you're on the Primrose Lane movie Facebook page, all you have to do is scroll down into the comments and you will see the link for every episode and podcast leading up to this one. It is a chronological series and we would hate to give you spoilers. So stop and go back. And for those of you who have continued on the journey with us, welcome. Let's go. So when we left off last time, we were about to talk about the door. So we have a guest room, which, you know, you can see in quite a few scenes in the film. And it's downstairs, and immediately adjunct to the staircase that we know, you know, had a lot of activity. So at one point in post-production of the film, we had our post-production supervisor come and stay with us for a month. He's from New York. And he stayed in the guest room, and there's a door that goes from the guest room to the front parlor, which, again, is in the film, but we, at the time, in post-production, were using that as our editorial suite. Now, he came to notice, he had quite a few experiences in the house, and he came to notice that the door would open on its own during the day. Never quite pinpointed exactly what time this would happen, but it happened for him every day that he was there. Now, this didn't happen every day that we were in the house, or if it did, I sure didn't notice this. And this was years into living there before anyone even noticed this phenomena. But once he brought it to our attention, and after he left, and I was still there working with the rest of the editorial team, it became a game for us that every day we would, when he left, we actually put a bookshelf behind the door so that it couldn't open, and where we kept our hard drives. But there was about a 2 to 3 inch gap, and still every day this door would open. Now, we did every imaginable test. The door wasn't loose. You had to crank it. It was an old knob, one of the original doors and knobs. We tried everything from going to the front door and opening it really fast so that, you know, imagining if there was any kind of suction or something coming from another part of the house. We tried opening the pocket doors really fast. We tried every imaginable door construct. We tried jumping all around it and dancing all around it and jiggling. You could jiggle the door from the doorknob pretty fiercely and it wouldn't fall open. And yet, this opened on its own every day. Now, the other thing is, to actually open it, you had to crank it, and it definitely had an audible sound. It wasn't a silent open. So, after he left, it became a game to us to try to catch the door opening on its own. And we had the shelf there, so it couldn't even open the whole way. And it pretty much every day opened, and we never once caught it. And there would never be fewer than two people in that room, sometimes as many as four. Nobody ever caught it, and yet at some point there we go, it's open! There it is! Pamela, any words to describe what was going on with the wackadoo door?
Well, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I can just tell you what I'm seeing now. How's that?
Yeah, it actually came up when you investigated the house, but I'm going to hear your interpretation, and then I'll circle around if it's anything different. But go ahead.
Well, other than there, it was a door to another dimension. Mm-hmm. Other than that, also I see this this man, tall, kind of tall, and he was actually messing with you guys. Mm-hmm. So that was his intention. Is to get your attention, in other words. So he waited until, I mean, you couldn't be there 24/7. So he'd wait till everybody got busy and then he'd open the door, which they can do. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about the portal now.
I don't want to go there yet.
Okay,
I didn't think so. In a few episodes.
Okay. Well, teaser. But I see this guy and he's really kind of dark. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of mad and upset. You guys were even there.
Do you have a sense? Because I will tell you in a second. And let me explain. When Pamela channels things, she often doesn't have a recollection herself. She gets so in the moment. So when she did finally do the investigation in the house, I chronicled everything as it happened. And I'll tell you in a second, because you did have a read on that scenario when you and it's not off the mark of what you're saying now. So do you have a sense now with what you're tapping into of his association with the house, if he had one or did not have one?
Right now it feels like he lived there.
Okay, I'll tell you now what you said during the investigation.
Okay.
You described a man, yeah. A tall man,
oh.
of not necessarily a pleasant demeanor, but but that he wasn't there to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
That he was there to make it known, and part of it was that he was just doing his job, because you described him as being sort of maybe a butler or something along that line of household help,
yeah.
And that he had a regular pattern of attending to that room and whomever was in that room, and so that it was part of his pattern, you know, he would pass through, and that was your logic originally for this being yeah. opened routinely at what was possibly the same time during the day. We just never quite nailed when that was. And it was interesting to us that there were other events too that happened to this post-production supervisor who was staying there. So he seemed to be kind of bent on making his presence known. And I think at the time, this I'm not 100%. Don't quote me on this one. But I think you said that, you know, in some ways too, because there was a guest there, he was sort of showing up to do his job. That he was attending to the fact that there.
But he didn't. It's weird because I felt like. During his lifetime, he didn't say much.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't allowed to say much. Nobody mm-hmm. wanted to hear what his opinion on anything or what he had to say. So to him, I see what you mean about it being his job, because he was kind of grumpy sounding. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he was grumpy. I think he just was never appreciated.
Never acknowledged.
So he just kept he gave the appearance of being grumpy, but now as I see him, I don't think he really was.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he wasn't allowed to have a personality. He was supposed to be in the background, like a lot of servants would have been back then.
So he just passed through another dimension, stopped in, did his job.
Yep,
let us know he was there and passed on his way through the hole to another dimension. Fantastic.
They're coming and they go.
Bad shit, crazy.
I like being that way.
Okay, so now let's go on. We shared with you in a previous episode the ghost attack on my husband. There was actually a second one. And this happened, it was at least a year and a half after the first. At this point, we were in the early stages of production with the film and pre-production with the film. I believe it's when we were still doing equipment tests. The script was being finalized. I was sitting in the dining room one night, late at night. Again, we've established I write when the world's asleep. And I felt something wash over me where, like, every hair went on end, and it just washed over my whole body, everything, you know, that tingly sensation, everything on end. It was very quick, a few seconds, and I thought nothing of it, because often I think, oh, I'm getting tired, falling asleep. It's my body trying to keep itself awake. But then within 30 seconds or less, I hear Anthony scream upstairs. This
wow.
time he's in the master bedroom.
Wow.
And I recognized it right away. It was that kind of strangled scream, but it was different from the first time. It wasn't as desperate. And again, I tear up the stairs. This time I know what it is. And sure enough, and he's much more in control, because he immediately recognized what it was. It was so specific a sensation to him. And he sat up, he had the light on when I walked in, and I said, you know, what's wrong? And he said, it happened again. And this time he was so in control that he didn't freak out. And he was just like, I'm going back to bed. Send the thing on its way.
That's awesome.
I'm going back. I'm much more concerned. I'm sitting on the bed and I'm struck. Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? Yeah, I'm okay. I'm going back to bed. But he described how he felt it, that this time he felt it try to come in through his hand, whereas before it was on his stomach and his back. This time he very specifically felt it on his hand. He woke up. He basically did his psychic shield thing, got rid of it. And he's, you know, ready to go back to bed. So I'm thinking, okay. And I'm trying to figure out what I make of this. It was the first time I thought it was sleep deprivation, and I had written it off and didn't believe. And this time, given that I had a very specific physical sensation, I took pause. But still, I thought, it's all, you know, again, maybe sleep deprivation. I stand up to leave. I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, stroking him. I stand up to leave. I take two steps back, and I step into a pool of what is just this electrically charged thing. And again, every hair on my body stands on end. I take one step out, I step out of it. I take one step back, I step in it. It was occupying a physical space.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see anything, but absolutely could feel this electrical charge. And then as I'm standing, it leaves, and I can feel it leave. And I'm walking through the upstairs. I'm walking into my husband's office, into my kids' room, and I keep finding it again, hiding out in corners. I can tell. I can just intuitively feel it's still here. And I keep, and I'm telling it to go and get out of the house, and it's not welcome. It has to leave.
How did that work out?
You have no power over us. Like,
did your voice get that dark?
I was doing the whole routine. I've watched the movies. And so I'm sending the thing on its way. Everybody else goes back to sleep, by the way. Yeah. I'm the only lunatic running through the upstairs doing this. And now I'm feeling like this guardian shepherd, because I still feel like the thing is there. And I'm afraid now to go to sleep with my family, sleeping like peaceful little lambs, oblivious to the evil in our house. So I go into bed, and I'm literally like hovering beside and kind of over my husband, because I don't want this thing to come back for him. And all of a sudden, I feel, and you know, unless you've had an intuitive experience, I don't know if this will relate, but it's without words, and yet a complete understanding, as if a dialogue is taking place, and a whole conversation could take place in a split second. And you understand it as if it were a line-by-line exchange. And that's what happened. So I'm there with him, and all of a sudden, it's like this thing comes back into the room. And this time, instead of just being this sort of menacing ball of energy, it's got this sort of human, and I can't see it. I'm just talking. I'm sensing it. I'm totally understanding what it's communicating. And it's got this kind of lacquered on human quality that doesn't feel human, but feels like something pretending to be. And it came in with this sort of, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scare you or hurt him kind of feel. And I was just like, not buying it. You gots to go, you know? And it lingered for a while, trying like these different manipulative tactics of pleading its apology. Okay, Pamela, I'm done. You, sister, explain. Yeah.
Okay. So the thing was, one of the things we talked about in another show, it was a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a combination of an experiment that they had made with a human DNA, mm-hmm. or human blood, or human cells, and also animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was exactly what it was presenting to you. It presented you a animal form, and it presented you a human form. It was both.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two things that can happen when you run into creatures like that. He could have morphed into, went from the more animal-like being and morphed into a more human-like being, because it was both.
Hmm.
And I'll explain more about that in a second. Or it could have been a masquerader and trying to get you to let down your guard and welcome this thing in, saying, oh, it's okay, you can stay.
Whatever it was, I definitely felt that it was seeking my approval and invitation, yes. And I refused to give it. But it was definitely that sense of, oh, don't make me go.
Yeah.
I'm not bad.
Well, but the thing is that, and tuning into it now, what I saw was the human aspect of it really did want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could also masquerade to get you to let your guard down, so the animal, the crazy animal aspect could attack you.
Mm-hmm.
But in this moment right now, I feel it was more towards morphing into, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. That aspect of me took over, which, you know, I have that happen a lot when I remove demons from people. And when they have demons in their home and I take them out of there, the energy of the form when I start completely changes and morphs into a more loving, like, oh my God, I'm sorry. And this is someone that has been evil in their life and demonic beings. And when I bring them into my energy system and surround them with love, then they morph into an apologetic being.
But you're saying the apology is sincere.
Yeah.
But it isn't.
Yeah, no. Of course it is. Yeah, it was, because that's what I was feeling. I don't feel like...
To me, it felt lacquered on. Like, in the
moment,
I felt like,
I'm
not buying that.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it protected you.
Mm-hmm.
It it protected you from fully embracing this being. You were rejecting it, even though this thing was really, truly the human aspect of it was apologetic. I mean, just imagine, like, oh my God, I'm evil, you know, and mm-hmm. seeing you guys' reaction to it helped it to transform. So in a way, it should make you feel really good because you helped that creature, that being, transform from darkness into light. So wow. it should actually make you feel good.
Well, good. I'm glad that we didn't get possessed by it instead. That's such a nicer outcome. There's the Hollywood ending for you, folks.
Or
you
it was
from the Hollywood sage.
Or it was a masquerader, and I'm totally wrong.
Okay. We need to go back to podcast 6, the one prior to this.
Yes.
Something happened during that podcast that we haven't had happen during any of the prior podcasts. We had what seemed to be a technical failure when Pamela sent me the file. I said, hey, you got to look at this. And then Pamela noticed something that I didn't notice. And we're going to do two things. I'm going to let Pamela talk a little bit about what she tapped into, what actually happened and where it happened. And then at the end of this podcast, we're going to play that whole segment for you, and you can come to your own conclusion. We invite you to leave comments on the Facebook page. We would love to hear from you. Pamela, take it away.
Well, what had happened is when you listen back to it, mm-hmm. there was nothing. Just at the moment we started talking about these hybrid creatures, there was nothing wrong with the podcast up until then. Everything was sound. There was no sound problems whatsoever. And the moment we started talking about these dark hybrid beings, there become massive quantities of static on the line.
And just to be clear, if you've listened to that podcast, we've re-recorded this segment for you so that you could, so it would be audible. What you'll hear at the end of this podcast is the original recording that Pamela is referring to.
Right. And so it was total static. And throughout that portion of the dialogue, we were talking about these dimensions and heaven and hell. And then the moment we switched that to talking about the other side, the static was gone.
Well, it's more than static, and I don't know if it's just that it's an interference, but because it actually sounds like a very creepy, almost man voice. Is that relevant in any way, or is that just electromagnetic interference from the other dimension, and that's what it produced?
Wow, what was it? I hadn't even looked at it until you just asked. Because it sounds like a Darth Vader kind of character that is echoing.
Yeah.
Because you can hear me say something, and then it's almost like an echo of, you know, Darth saying it. I'm trying to see now if that was actually... Ooh. Sorry, I have to go back to the last time we were together to see what that was exactly. Okay. Wow. It was somebody. Yes, there was clearly a being there that was just there. They weren't, I'll put it this way. It's not like they were knowingly interfering with the sound, but what they were doing, their presence was totally screwing with the sound. That's the best way I can put it. Because I saw this being, and he was right behind me. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking, it was just static. When I was talking, it became this really dark, deep, really creepy thing. And he was standing right behind me. But I don't see him, like, manipulating the energy of it, anything. He was just, his presence was doing it. Mm-hmm. And then when we started talking about the other side, he went away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, uh-oh. Light approaching, gotta go. I'm out of here.
So we just had a dark interloper.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I was tuning into this dimension where these beings were at, and it was, I've never had any, well, I've had a lot of strange things happen, I gotta say, but that was a very strange thing that happened. When you pointed out to me, I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And then the moment it started and the moment it stopped was the most fascinating part about it.
Okay, so listen on, listeners. We're going to include that full clip from start to finish for you right now. And we invite you to tune in with us next week, next Saturday, on the Primrose Lane Facebook page. And we also put the post at thehollywoodsage.com. Thank you. Have a great week. you can correct all this in a second, their own dimension that they go to that isn't what we would think of as our heaven or hell, or where we go in and what we would refer to as afterlife, that they sort of have their own designated plane of existence. And I'm going to let you pick it up there and explain what that is.
Well, what had happened, the reason they existed, is important to know. This is the point of the story you want me to tell. Because there's some people that close by to you, and there was let's just call it a hospital for right now. And there was a lot of experimenting going on.
And what happened is the agent heard, or part of that experimentation where they were.
Hybrids.
We'll call them.
And they were trying to create something in that lab. Well, there's no place for those kind of creatures in what most of us have as the afterlife. So they're not there because they don't belong anymore. So that's why I say they have their own dimension. You know, yes, there is a dimension that some people would call hell. It's not, but it's what some people would call a hellish-like dimension. They're not even there.
Wow.
Because on the other side, we hang out with the people that, and things, if you will, that we are on the same vibration that they are.